This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Well, it's just gone 28 minutes to 7 here on Classic 1027's Classic Business Show, broadcast on Classic 1027 and on Fine Music Radio down in the fairest Cape. And time to have a little bit of fun, as one of our panelists put it earlier in a tweet. We've got the early, the nascent ingredients of a little Santa Claus rally to see off 2018, which by most accounts, and I think in most markets outside of the US and ours, has been something of an annus horribilis for equities in particular. There was a very interesting chart that I had a look at from Deutsche Bank last week, when I was getting quite down about this all being an SA Inc. play. 2018 is shaping up to be the third worst year here for assets since 1901. And the yardstick there was percentage of assets with negative returns in local currency. So it's been tough for all asset classes in most markets. It's not just a South African story. But it also means a few things. Firstly, stocks are on sale. Second, as the year approaches the December break, it's time to reflect on your portfolio and to perhaps learn some of the lessons and to use this as an opportunity to spruce up. And all this week, that's what we're doing. By having a bit of fun, we're giving you some Christmas stocking filler ideas with some of the best stocks, with some of the best in the business as well. Starting tonight with some South African listed large caps. So let's welcome our trio of wise stock pickers. Firstly, Nkareng Mpobane, the Chief Investment Officer of Ashburton Investments. Thanks so much for joining us in studio.
Thanks, Michael.
And on the line, we've got Hannes van den Berg, Equity Portfolio Manager at Investec Asset Management. Hannes, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. Good evening.
And regarding capital management, CEO Pitt Viljoen. Pitt, it's been a while. I hope you're keeping well.
It's been a while. Good to be back. Hello, Michael.
Now, the rules of the game, so to speak, the way it works is you've each got around 3 minutes per individual stock to sell the story. I'll chime in and help us keep to the time. Nkareng, your first pick here is Sasol, and what a day to pick it when it really popped on the back of the weekend's oil news. What do you like about Sasol, considering it's had one of those madcap rides this year? And it's a perfect example of why we need to keep calm and not to panic when we're investing in highly cyclical businesses like Sasol.
So I think the story around Sasol, certainly before the weekend, the view was it was a great opportunity to enter a position in the stock. So you'd seen oil prices coming off on supply concerns, etc. And if your view, firstly, is of a weakening profile in the rand over the longer term, that would be supportive of the story. But more than that, I think it's the initiation or turning on the Lake Charles plant that they've been building over a number of years in the past. So you can expect that cash profile in Sasol improves. So essentially, you can look at it as converting debt into equity as they pay down significant debt from turning on that project. So it's a very good long-term story for us. And if you find opportunity, which we did in the last week or two, where we saw the scare around Sasol coming through in a lower oil price environment, we grabbed that opportunity.
Now, you're using the past tense there. Has that little rally that we've seen in Sasol meant that the opportunity is gone? Or is this something, if you believe in that medium to long-term story, that you shouldn't be trying to time in any of it?
Certainly. I think just a longer-term view that we have around Lake Charles is quite strong, and still, even after all the volatility in the stock, even into this week, we still think it's an opportunity to start nibbling, at least if you have no exposure at all.
Yeah. I was speaking to Dr. Rod Crompton last week. There is an opportunity here to try and get Sasol to reinvest in South Africa around the hydrogen economy. I don't know if government's quite thinking that far down the road yet, and I don't want to derail us here. What are the risks to Sasol? If that's the opportunity and that's the story that you like about it at the moment, what are the key risks?
So I think if your view as well around into 2019 is around a very good election outcome, and you're seeing a strengthening rand profile, and you know how the rand can overshoot to the upside and downside. In quite an excessively strong rand environment, you would probably see pressure in that share price. But on a fundamental basis, the long-term view and the story around Lake Charles is probably quite a good opportunity, certainly. And then you must take a view on natural gas as well.
Pitt, your first stock for the Christmas stocking is MTN. Deep value, we know you're a value investor, and it's been one of those counters that has been buffeted by almost every little piece of bad news that could go wrong this year. What do you like about MTN? It's announced today that we've got a date finally for that dispute between itself and the Nigerian Attorney General over that, $2 billion tax bill?
Yeah, it's quite a hefty tax bill, and I think that's what's creating opportunity, and the stock has sold off tremendously from 5 years ago at, 250 Rand, when it was the poster child for African expansion and investing into Africa and all those good things. And today at 80 Rand, nobody wants to know about it because Africa has turned around bitted a bit. But I think that any business that operates in a highly regulated environment will face that headwind from time to time, but it's not a permanent headwind. And I think over time that goes away. And in the meantime, the actual business on the ground in Nigeria is doing fantastically well. South Africa is taking over, and they've got some other irons in the fire as well. So, you know, I think it's a good business. It delivers a product to its customers that the customers want to use. It has a high brand value. And I think over time they will do just fine. And at the moment, the market is saying that they won't. And I think I'm willing to take the other side of that wager.
And looking at the management team, it was when CEO Rob Shooter was appointed that of a turnaround story and a self-help turnaround story with an excellent management team. And I want to focus on that just because there's broader lessons for investors in this. We've seen the battering of corporate South Africa's management credentials this year. Our reputation, thanks largely to Steinhoff, is seemingly lying in tatters. Is this a management team that that you would back to be able to ride through all of these geopolitical and really difficult markets that it's entering in?
It's hard to say. It's hard to make a call on that. I think management teams in general are never as brilliant as the market thinks they are, and also never as bad as the market thinks they are. So one has to be very careful about making big judgments about management teams. But I do think the new team that's in place in MTN is incentivized properly, and they're driven to succeed, and therefore they probably have the odds on their side, whereas the previous management team have probably got, there was probably a bit of hubris around there, and they let a couple of balls drop. I'm not sure this team will let those same sort of balls drop. So I think, again, it shades the odds in your favour somewhat.
From a risk perspective, equally to the question that I asked in Kareng, if you were to flip that around, what would you say are some of the key risks to that thesis?
Look, I mean, as I said earlier, any highly regulated business faces regulatory risk. I mean, as one's seen with Mediclinic in Switzerland and MTN in Nigeria and many companies in Africa, regulators tend to hurt businesses from time to time. So I think that's probably the key risk. But I think it's a good question thinking about, because that's a dangerous thing about these topics. Anything can come out of blue and hurt a Sasol or an MTN or a this or a that, and that's why one runs a portfolio and you don't pick just one stock. We knew exactly what the future held. We just buy the stock that would do the best and hold that one. But we don't. We run the portfolios with 40 or 50 stocks in them, some of which will do well and some which won't. We just don't know which are those. So MTN faces many risks, to get back to the question. It faces many risks, and I guess the risks that could hurt it are the ones we don't even know about at this point.
Yeah, the unknown unknowns, as someone famously...
Exactly, but the thing that you have in your favour is a margin of safety. The price, the market is putting a value on the business which is far below its intrinsic value under normal operating circumstances. So you've got that margin of safety buffer, so to speak, against anything bad happening.
Yeah, as we know, who is it? Benjamin Graham, the the father of this kind of analysis and looking for the margin of safety becomes quite key. Hannes Pepkor, your first pick, and I think one of those has got a lot of people talking at the moment. We're in that period now where it's almost a year since Steinhoff. It's a very hotly debated stock. Interesting, though, to see that at its results recently, PwC signed off on the accounts, which implies that the forensic accounting team, which is the one working on Steinhoff as well, has nothing material to report, which must be a good sign. Comfort. Or is it
correctly?
Or is it not because we don't trust auditing firms anymore?
Yeah, it's, I decided to pick Pepkor. It's almost to the day now that a year ago we heard of some accounting irregularities and auditors not willing to sign off on financial statements of one of the biggest listed entities on our exchange. And I think some of that smell still hasn't gone away. But I think the recent set of results, and I must agree with what Pete also said, I mean, there's a lot of emotion around management teams in the South African market. But the Pepkor management team for me stands out as guys who are, they've got a good strategy. The customer comes first, the reinvesting price. I mean, you saw it in the recent results. I mean, their same-store sales, which is mostly Pep and Ackerman same-store sales, grew 5.3%. And you must remember this was in a tough environment, a deflationary environment for them. So if you add the inflation effect back, they actually grew their like-for-like volumes in Pep and Ackerman's by 8.1%. I mean, that's phenomenal retailing in a very, very difficult environment in South Africa. I mean, the fuel price, the 17-18% fuel price before this petrol cut that we now recently received over the weekend, but that sort of took close to 20 billion rand out of our economy, and that's tough for the consumer. So not a lot of confidence, and you know, with this tough macro backdrop, as a retailer, these oaks traded quite well. Their strategy is good. I mean, they've got 70% market share in schoolwear in South Africa, 60% market share in baby's clothing, and 30-40% market share in kids' clothing. It's a phenomenal retailer, and it's trading at a discount to a fairly similar company, Mr. Price, which is trading on an 18 multiple, Pepkor trading on a 15 multiple. So it's a bit of a discount. I think people wanted to see a clean set of audited financials. As you rightly said now, PwC were also doing a forensic investigation on the holding of the parent company, Steinhoff, signed off on the financial statements of Pepkor. People wanted to see disclosure, improved outlook statement, and I think they've delivered on a lot of that. So credit where credit is due, and this is a business that potentially can give you 13-15% earnings growth, a dividend yield of 3% over the next 12 months. So it's one that I'm going to back at this stage.
And, you know, talk about a management team that are going to have the bit between their teeth. I'm sure Christo Visser has got a point to prove in the wake of that Steinhoff debacle. Inflation, though, hasn't been the friend of retailers in South Africa over the last while. What are we expecting on that front? And just to end off with, what you perhaps see as some of the key risks?
Yeah, I think we attended a conference last week where we actually spoke to a lot of the food retailers and the clothing retailers. Food retailers expect, you know, close to 4-5% inflation to start coming through. And when you speak to the food producers, they also say, you know, the input costs are going up, so they're going to have to push this through. So unfortunately, on the food side, we see some inflation coming through, which is not great. But as I said, we've now got a 10% cut in fuel prices that's coming through, and that will definitely leave a bit more money in the wallet of the consumer. Some of the risks, I think you said it before, I mean, the rand blowing out can potentially be a risk to inflation. We've had one interest rate hike, although I think it will be one and done. I don't think we see more interest rate hikes going into next year. But I do think sort of inflation and the rand will potentially be a risk. And then I think confidence, you know, the South African consumers, the willingness to spend, our savings rate has gone up. We need to get confidence back before people will actually take that money out of their wallets and actually go and buy things.
You know, Hannes, that's a point I agree wholeheartedly on. I think what we're seeing with the consumer is not a lack of ability to spend. We've actually seen some deleveraging in terms of household balance sheets.
Correct.
It's a confidence issue. It's just the fact that because of all of this uncertainty, and a lot of it own goal generated through the Eskoms of this world and the state capture narrative over the last decade, consumers are just not going out and buying the big ticket items. But I think should we start to see that confidence reform from the top, We'll see the consumer spending from the bottom. We've lost Pitful Yun and apparently are struggling with his line. He's probably on a wine farm somewhere in a very difficult and dodgy signal area. Anyway, Inkering, number two in your stocking for the roo is another Visa entity, ShopRite. It's had a tough year, as tough as I can recall for what are widely regarded as the A team in retail management. And I think perhaps some investors just starting to raise an eyebrow. The loss of Whitey Besson, difficult transition. There's only one Whitey Besson. And I'm perhaps just speaking from pure anecdotal experience here. But in my local checkers for the last while, the stock issue, I've never really had stock issues there in the local just around the corner before, and I've seen a few. So I see a potential risk or two in this one. What do you like about ShopRite?
What I like, and I'll talk to management just now, but what I like, there's really what may have been seen as issues in the past, but potentially these are opportunities. And much to what Hannes has talked about around inflation, improving food inflation, and that's what really drives the share price of ShopRite, or feeds in as a big driver to the share price. And that's a rising food inflation environment relative to the overall basket. So that will drive your top line, and an improving environment in food inflation ahead of operating expenses will keep margins steady and improving. So that's really, in a nutshell, what we like. We expect that the food low food inflation environment has troughed or bottomed, and we have already seen recovery in previous quarters in the food inflation inflation basket. And then it talks again to consumerism. So the point that you made earlier, where consumers are certainly in a far better balance sheet state, where over the last couple of years they've managed to deleverage. Also, interest rates were somewhat supportive for them to be able to do that. And so if you expect, and your outlook is that South Africa starts to improve into next year, then you've got an improving food inflation basket, and then you've also got a consumer that's potentially also willing to spend. And again, that will speak to sentiment, as Hannes alluded earlier. Also, I think the risk to that view is that you don't want food inflation to spike. So there is the risk that El Nino is on the cards, meaning lower rainfalls, etc. So you don't want the food price increase to spike. You want it to be gradual, and so that ShopRite, for instance, is able to pass through that rising profile.
We did have the issue with the distribution center. There were some SAP implementation issues. Once off?
Yeah. So we certainly think it's once off. I mean, these guys were ahead of the peer group in terms of investing in centralized distribution centers, as well as investing quite heavily in their IT spend. And then also in these past results, there were other issues, for instance, higher than normal incidents of robberies, where management has had to review that, and that impacted quite meaningfully in terms of footfall into their big supermarket stores. And then Africa also experienced headwinds, their currencies coming off quite meaningfully. We think that Africa gradually improves, maybe not into 2019, but certainly it's still a good story for them on the long term.
Who would forget Peter Engelbrecht saying at their results that it's a war zone out there? And thanks largely to helping out with SASSA payments and becoming sitting ducks. We saw the story around the Global Citizen concert last night. How sad that is to see that we've lost control at that level. But we've got Pitful Yun back on the line, so I don't want to digress too much. Pit, we lost you for a second, but thanks for coming back to us. We go deeper into value territory now with HCI. Now, there's a very interesting story around HCI, and I'll let you tell it.
Well, I think HCI is one of those stocks where there are many, many ways in which you can win. First of all, at the helm, you have probably one of South Africa's best capital allocators in the name of Johnny Copeland. I think over many, many years, he's proved his ability to allocate capital properly and earn very good returns for shareholders. So that's the first point. The second point is it's an investment company, so it owns a whole bunch of other companies, and it's trading at about a 30 to 40% discount to the current market value of those businesses. So you're getting his capital allocation skills at a big discount. And the last point is that all the underlying companies themselves are extremely cheap. I think the biggest investment is Toho Sun, which is very, very cheap. E-Media, Hospitality Property, Deneb. If you look at all the underlying businesses, they range from very cheap to very, very, very cheap. So you're getting a group of cheap assets at a big discount with a superior capital allocator at the helm. And I think over the long term, that is a winning combination.
Can I move you to perhaps choose if you were to go HCI or go directly into Tsoho or Hospitality Property Fund, or would you just say go with a little bit into all three?
Well, I probably would default to buying the top company, because I think that is the closest to Johnny's economic interests themselves. So, I'd like to align myself with them. It's probably as simple as that.
Right, let's move along because we are running short of time here. I'm not being a very good time allocator. Speaking of allocators, Hannes, your second stock pick is Anglos. What is the big theme driving the diversified majors at the moment, and particularly the one that's going to support the likes of an Anglo-American?
Well, we are fairly constructive still on commodities. I agree with the Sasol call we mentioned earlier, and we've got a lot of resources in our portfolio. Anglo-American, and the reason why we like it, we think that we're not going to see a recession, and that trend growth, 3 to 3.5%, is a good image. It's not a recession. It's not a negative number. We think the supply-demand dynamics on most of the commodities still supportive for these commodities. The flight to quality theme that we're seeing in China, and on the supply side, the value over volume argument, Anglo-American stands out to us. I mean, it's trading in a single multiple. It's got a free cash flow yield of double digits. Currently at spot, it's 14.3%. If you go and look at a sum of the parts valuation for Anglo-American, you're not paying much for the SA assets at all at current spot prices. And it's trading at a discount to most of the other majors, the Rios and the Glencores and the BHPs of the world. So again, at spot commodity prices, there's a lot going for these companies, and we don't think China is a hard landing. So if all of that stays intact, we're constructive on resources.
Well, I think you've just given away the key risks there. China hard landing, and obviously the Trump trade war with China is critical and key to all of this. We've discussed it briefly earlier on in the show. The can kick down the road. A friend of mine put it to me last night that it's just a tea break and a 5-day test. This one, how do you read it?
Yeah, so two gentlemen had a bit of sirloin and a glass of Malbec over the weekend, and the sort of two presidents decided that let's have a ceasefire for 3 months. Let's see how all this plays out. At least I think the market priced in more negative news than what we got over the weekend.
And Karang, lastly, you have AVI, which will be serving up some of our favorite branded snacks this Christmas. So what's not to love about AVI?
I think this is very different again to the ShopRite story, which we painted, which is less of an inflation story. And so this retailer really focused on the high quality brand, and it's the leader in these brands. So really positioning itself as the leading player in terms of teas and coffees, biscuits, etc., as you alluded to. So not so tied to inflation, but more tied to an improving GDP environment. So where the consumer is feeling better about their wallet, they will probably start trading up to higher quality type brands. And so you would expect that in that environment, management is able to preserve and again improve margins. So we really like this company. It has the best margins in the industry, the best ROEs, a really good dividend yield profile, and this is why we give it leeway to trade at a premium relative to its peers. So for instance, just even on an average long-term historical ROE, 5-year average, we've looked at that, and it trades on a 33 or 34% ROE, so to speak, and its second closest peer is trading at 23 times, so that's like 23%, and that's 10% above the second closest competitor. And then also just on dividend yields, a very attractive forward yield of 7% or so. And this company has, we do know that in the past it's often distributed special dividends as well. So we really like that profile. We think that it is defensively positioned and into a consumer environment, if you have that out. Look, of course, of an improving consumer, then we really like the story quite a lot.
Commanding the premium for a reason. The risk, though, and as far as I would see it, is that of the propensity of the consumer to trade back to the heritage brands, because it's one thing that came through from the Tiger brand results recently is that own label, white label house brands have really eaten away at the heritage brands. And what we're seeing is consumers saying, hang on, the value proposition doesn't quite square up to the premium that I'm paying for some of these brands. So I don't know if that holds true in the biscuit and the kind of tea coffee space. Maybe more loo roll and dishwashing liquids and that kind of thing. But do you see that as a risk?
So we certainly have seen, say, over the last 2 or 3 years, where they've lost a market share due to private label or those what might be seen as lower priced brands. And this is why it's important to talk about a consumer that's feeling better about their wallet, because then in that environment, they trade up, they trade higher, and they're willing to buy Five Roses as opposed to the kind of white label Pick and Pay brand.
And then, Hannes, on the flip side of that, just we've got like 45 seconds here. As I said, I'm a terrible time allocator. You've decided to say why not Tiger Brands, but rather Pioneer Foods. Why is that?
Tiger Brands came from 450 Rand to 268 Rand, where it's trading today, because of 2% of its profits value added meat. You know, and they came out today with a class action that's been certified because of listeriosis. I think there's a lot of negative sentiment in the food producer space. It's obviously tough there. Pioneer for us, I mean, it traded at 130, 140 Rand a few months ago. It's today at 87.50. They've got essential foods, groceries, and products like Lipton iced tea, liquid fruit, Sasco bread. Good products, and we tend to think that, you know, in line with the AVI call, a lot of negative news has been priced into these stocks. It is a bit of a war zone out there, margin issues and competitive mindset, I agree with that. But not one we have in our portfolio now, but definitely one to look at second half of next year.
Very interesting. Petful Ewan, I'm going to have to invite you back to talk about your last pick, Stefanuti Stocks, which was really a left field one for me, considering the construction sector. Thank you very much to all our panelists tonight, our three wise investment analysts. And thank you for tuning into Classic Business. Sylvia A. up next in the lounge for our Cape Town listeners. And in Gauteng, the world's most beautiful music in the company of Carolyn Stain with her classic cocktail hour. Till tomorrow, good night.